I'm Steven.
I'm Chris.
I'm Stargate Pioneer.
And I'm the French-Canadian Sensation.
And we're the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a podcast member of the GunnaGeek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts
at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready.
Because geekiness begins in...
3, 2, 1.
Let's geek!
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I like it with the helmet on.
And Keir Hansen.
And that's why, to this day, I can't eat cotton candy.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 184 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where the extension of all Earth life actually depends on the dodo, or something to that effect. It'll all make sense in a monoid. I mean, a minute. I'm just going to start over again. I am Jay, and with me in the GPR studios this week is Keir. How are you doing tonight, Keir?
I'm doing awesome, sir. Yourself?
Doing fantastic. And Haley, how are you doing tonight?
Also fantastic.
So, what are we up to tonight?
Well, this week, we return to our Hartnell rewatch arc with... well, the arc. It's the third season story that sees the Doctor, Spaceman Steven, and the often forgotten companion, Dorothea Ann Dodo Chaplet, whose common cold sets off a series of events aboard a giant spaceship carrying the only remaining humans, and another odd species, from the remnants of Earth to a new life-sustaining planet.
This was a good one to look back into for a number of reasons. Obviously, we don't get a whole lot of mention of Dodo. She tends to get kind of overlooked a bit in some of the shorter lived companions along the way, especially within the first 5-6 seasons or so of Classic Who. But it's also, according to many people, it's considered to be one of the most delightfully ridiculous villains that you ever get to deal with in the form of the Monoids.
Just a bit.
But it gets a lot of praise too, and I'm glad that it does, because obviously, you know, my tendency to try to find the bright and shiny in these things, I don't have to work as hard with this one. I like it. It takes some abuse, but I think it stands it.
It's fun, you know. It kind of made me think of a Futurama's take on a Doctor Who episode.
Yes, yeah, it has that kind of over the top ishness at times. But that's the thing. So I look at the four episodes. Okay, and they sort of get split in half, if you want to sort of treat it that way, because the first half of them, the first two episodes, really have to deal with the whole issue of the illness that Dodo has brought onto the ship by bringing the common cold, which is something the human race has not been exposed to for since the 10th time sector, whatever, however they were measuring those things. And that's, it, personally, when I look at it, I'm saying, okay, this was March of 66. This is pretty solid science fiction here. You know, it's got some basis in the whole understanding of how the human body and the immune system, evolves over time, and, you know, stretch that out for millions of years, and how much, you know, this is interesting, engaging stuff. And the Monoids are just there. They're like the Ood.
Exactly.
They're a lot like the Ood in the first two episodes. Don't say anything. They got their weird little sign language thing going on there, which is fine. It's just a little doing what the hell I'm doing. But it's I really enjoyed it, and it gave me a chance to kind of accept Dodo's character, because for those who haven't seen or watched reconstructions of things of the previous story that are partially lost, that's kind of gives her introduction. She just kind of dashes on to the TARDIS, and then she's just there. Doctor accepts her rather quickly, because I think it's kind of in his heart of hearts, it's a replacement for Susan. And then we've got Steve, Spaceman Steve. Hey, we still love Spaceman Steve. So that's it's a good working trio. What did you guys think about, especially Haley? I mean, just you kind of got thrown into the deep end on this and having to deal with it. What was your take on these two as companions?
Well, just in my little limited exposure from this story, I saw Steve as not Ian, and I saw Dodo as not Susan.
Okay. To their detriment?
Not necessarily to the detriment. That's just, I haven't seen a lot of development of these characters, and that's just kind of how they came across. Like, if you were saying, what archetype are they going into, that's where they would fall.
I think at times I would have hoped that Steve, with his background, would have been a little bit more involved in tying into his knowledge. I mean, he from time to time, I mean, anything that involves spaceships, he's like the Benny. He's spaceship. he gets that bit, but it doesn't get applied as often as you might want to with a character with that background story. But Dodo's just Dodo. She just jumps into it. She's very committed to the Doctor. She relies on him, and I think he embraces her very quickly. And I think it's a good chemistry. Maybe that's why they just don't seem to get quite as much respect retrospectively, is because the fact that they were clearly, this is the Naughty and this is the not Susan.
Yeah, and that they do really fall into those categories, and it was. It's sad because they do seem like they have such great, there's potential there. I mean, especially with Steven, the way you said, it could have been so much better than, okay, here's the dashing hero type, and he's just going to do exactly the same thing that everybody else that fills that role is. Mm. Yeah, and Dodo is just the plucky little, here, let me, jump in here just to, say stuff that needs to be said and serve as a third person to talk to.
Right. Well, but I think she has a good heart. She's not quite as apt to completely disregard what grandfather has asked and go off and do her own thing. So that, that's a benefit to her. Mm-hmm. And Steven, I think, I think it was in the first or second story when he actually volunteers to be the one to represent, to be put on trial. Because he feels I can't stay in here. I have to do something. And it's not exactly, go be the big lunk to go break doors down or knock heads. He wants to actually speak his mind, even though everyone else wants to talk to the Doctor. But see, good story through the first two episodes, Doctor comes up with this conclusion, or finds a solution, even though he's not that kind of a doctor. But in this case, he really is that kind of a doctor. Gives everybody their inoculations. And then it's very weird, they get carted back to the TARDIS at the end of the second episode, and they're whizzing off. Wait a second.
I thought we had two more.
We still got 44 minutes plus to go here in remaining episodes. What's the problem?
Mm-hmm. I'm not as sharp as I usually am, but I finished the second episode. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm done.
And then, here's the thing. Here's where it starts to get a little unusual, because when they come back, and I know that this was, I know historically this was the first story that was actually shot out of sequence, which was considered to be kind of an unusual format for them, but they actually shot the fourth episode first, from what I understand. So they had the whole story laid out as far as Erickson and Scott had written it, and a consistent director throughout. So Michael Imeson was in there for all four installments. But yet the third and fourth episodes feel and definitely come across considerably differently as soon as the Monoids become the masters of the Ark over whatever happened in the 7 years hence. And that's where I think the story sets itself up for all the abuse that it takes.
Yeah, because it really just... I mean, the Monoids kind of did what they had to do in the first two episodes. They were there as, here, carry this. Drive the little cart that makes the god-awful noise and goes really freaking slow. Do that kind of stuff, but...
Just keep that camera on it the whole time. I know. God. And then when he backs out, he drops them off, TARDIS dematerializes, and then the slowest reverse out of frame ever.
Seriously, I swear it was like 15 seconds.
You gotta wonder, guys, you could have just written a couple more lines of interesting dialogue. Just something. Some plucky quips from Dodo. Something,
You could have sold another ad. Oh, wait a second.
Well, yeah.
So, but once you get to the second half of the story, all of a sudden these, these non-entities, these walking mannequins for all intents and purposes, are supposed to be this, the overlords, this threatening villain kind of thing. And it's like, I mean, okay, yes, the synthesized voices and stuff work well for the Daleks and the Cybermen, but these guys were just awful.
It really was. I mean, I know there's an extra piece that was released on one of the DVD sets that it's called One Hit Wonders, and it talks about the monoids specifically. And they go into they discuss it with a couple of past writers and historians, Whovian historians, and they just kind of discuss it as a matter of, you know, there are times when you know you're not going to see a villain come back ever. And a lot of times it was because it was sort of commensurate with how much it looked like a human in a suit, because that was just, I mean, these things were just, the design was just bad from the top down, from the shag wigs to the eyeball in the mouth down to the split flipper feet that they could barely move in, and the visible zippers on the back.
Yeah.
So I think, but that what was so strange about it was that the sets in these stories were gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from the opening sequence of the first one, where you're going through the jungle, there's the fog, there's live animals they're working with. There's a freaking Indian elephant there and a Komodo dragon, and I was really impressed. And even when they do the spaceship interior, they try to do they get some perspective with the painted murals in the background to make the ship look deeper. I mean, they really put a lot of work into the sets, and I think they just blew the budget.
And so, it's like, oh wait, we're supposed to have a monster in here too. Crap.
We'll tape a bunch of wigs to this onesie and yeah. Call it good.
I got some wigs left over from the caveman from an unearthly child. If you want to just put them on top of it.
Here, put an eyeball in the mouth. It's a monster now. Yeah, no. But
yeah.
The one thing I will say that bothered me more than anything else is, like, what kind of crackpot spaceship design makes your main thoroughfare the control ship? It seemed like no matter where you went in that ship, you had to go through the control room.
Yes. Yes. Well, I think they were planning on running on a pretty skeleton crew. I mean, everybody was supposed to be miniaturized, which in and of itself, I think that's another really interesting scientific science fiction convention for them to use, the whole miniaturizer. I was hoping that they were going to, because they use it to obviously explain, well, where are all the millions of Earthlings? Well, they're in these trays.
Yeah.
We're going to reconstitute them like...
just add water.
Like sea monkeys. They're like sea monkeys. That's what they are. They're just brine shrimp. This makes so much more sense to me now. Now I want to see the ads. But yeah, reconstitute your own planet. And they shrunk the one guy down, obviously, as his punishment. But they were supposed to be running on a very limited crew. So I wanted them to use it again, like when they were setting up for the conclusion, when they said, well, the bomb is in the statue and what are we going to do? And the Refusian, which, great, come on, the planet name of Refuse, you know, or the Refusians,
yeah.
It's just a garbage, it's just a throwaway planet. But I thought that they were going to somehow bring the miniaturizer back and have the Refusian say, well, in his big booming voice of God thing off camera, put it in the miniaturizer and I will make it very small and flick it outside with my giant unseen finger, right, kind of thing.
Then you just set off a firecracker and it makes sense.
Yes, because as Haley was wont to notice, the Foley work in these stories was exceptional.
Yeah, I'm very sensitive to sounds right now, and there were some harsh ones.
Yeah, the sound Foley and our effects crew, as far as anything that had to go out, you're sending off a lander? Oh, boy. Slowest approach to the planet forever. But again, that said... I still had a lot of fun with it because the monoids were so ridiculously over the top, maniacal, and they're infighting.
The best part was, are you up to something? No.
That was the best. They're constantly they're talking to each other about their plans all the time.
Right. Instead of using whatever language that they obviously had before, they're using the voice boxes so that everyone can overhear them.
The ones that they sometimes touch to make them work.
Right. Sometimes
they're Star Trek communicators. Whatever.
No, but see, the one when Dodo figures out that they're up to something, that was the moment that I had this story figured out. That was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm not supposed to take these guys seriously. This is a comedy at this point. This is a complete farce. If I take it, and looking at it from that viewpoint, I thoroughly enjoyed the second two episodes.
Mm. Yeah. I think I reached the same point. You get to a point where you're like, well, I'm obviously not going to take him seriously, but let's just see how far this goes, because this is obviously just redonkulous, and they're fully committed to it. I loved, we're just going to call him One, Monoid One, was such a lunatic, and his grandiose plans, that especially when he gets to the point, I'm not going to say that he reminds me of any particular presidential candidates or anything, but even when there's infighting...
It was the hair, wasn't it?
It doesn't matter. It just goes right over me and goes, this everything will correct itself because my plan. And it just, it was a blast. But even before that, just some of the character work they did, who's the prime chancellor among the Earthlings that you see within the first episode, the elderly guy who falls sick to Dodo's cold first and so forth. He was so over the top. Yes, everything. I loved it. I loved it because it was so cheeseball. But speaking of cheese, all the food that these human slaves keep preparing, how do they eat? They got an eyeball in their mouth. No other orifice I can see.
It's under the hair.
It is. They just pick up the wig, stuff one of those fruits, or the instant potatoes, the instant chicken wings. Come on. That's what I wouldn't give for a can of instant chicken wings. Just drop that little pellet on it. Boop.
You know it tastes like cardboard.
It probably tastes just as good as Rey's bread in The Force Awakens.
Yeah, but that looks all kinds of awesome. It might not taste good, but I'd be making that stuff all day long.
Garlic Ray bread, lamb Ray bread. Well, I don't know. I still really enjoyed the entire story. I thought it was fun, even when it got to the point where you could clearly you saw the answer, you saw the conclusion coming. Well, probably a full episode and a half early. We've got an invisible ally whom our adversary still does not believe exists. That's, so the whole sneaking into the lander and sneaking out of the ship.
Why this story really appeals to me? Because we actually had time travel in the story. It wasn't just a vehicle to get you somewhere.
It was a mechanic of the story.
Exactly.
Very true.
Nice.
Yeah. And I love how their story becomes, like, the visit of the Doctor and his two companions over the course of 700 years becomes a myth among the remaining Earthlings and things. That's solid sci-fi.
Yeah. And then they bring it up again at the end, like, do you seriously think that our kids are going to believe this, or is it going to be a legend? It's like,
And I also liked even some of the little things, when they first land on Refusus and they're walking into this, it looks like a castle, and they go in and there's chairs, doorknobs, and flowers in a vase and everything. I'm looking at this, I'm like, how does this possibly, all they've had was, as I said, what did they call it? It was audio, what was there, audio research that they were doing? Yeah, I have to look up exactly how they said that they had studied this planet to prospect it.
It was like radio audio science or something.
Right. So they end up doing this research. They come out here. They find a planet that's already been prepared. Audio space research. That's what it is. Audio
there
space.
There you go, yes.
Our knowledge is based purely on audio space research. But you're like, why is this all set up for humanoids? And then they say, well, we wanted to build this for you because we knew you were coming and we wanted to make it comfortable for you. Okay. That accepted. Absolutely accepted.
We don't know if we can trust you yet. I mean, we're still checking you guys out, but no, we'll go ahead and terraform our entire planet just to suit you in case it works out, you know?
Yeah. It's not going to affect us much because we have no corporeal form. And we're apparently wicked strong. Lifting up these statues. Biggest thing to be stuffed out the landing bay.
No, I think that this one was a lot of fun. And this is a great example of, the classic dilemma of... We have plenty of really high quality stories in the classic era, but they're difficult to get through because of the production value or the Foley or the monster designs or whatever it is. But if you can make it past a lot of that, these are, they might not be, tremendously world changing plots, but they're a lot of fun at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And I think with this one, even some of your supporting actors and things, some of the various Earthlings, and even back in the first story when you've got Xentos and Melium and so forth. You know, the daughter who wants to support them and help them. You've got the guy who wants to put him on trial, but as soon as he sees, you know, oh, okay, Doc's been able to save him, he comes around. You know, these are engaging characters. I give him a lot of credit. I'm gonna say I enjoyed the first two episodes considerably better. Maybe it wasn't as intense of a story, but it was more of a solid bit of storytelling there. But there's aspects throughout that I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I had some fun with it. Mm-hmm.
I did have one question. If the Time Lords are traveling through time all the time, wouldn't they have some sort of mechanism in place to prevent some random pathogen from wiping out an entire civilization?
I don't know. Can you account for all the possible exposures to all the possible species? I mean, they're Time Lords, but they're not a super healer class.
I would imagine that's probably something that's built into the TARDIS, and it's just blocking the doctors. Yeah, I would think it'd
be like the translator matrix thing. It's just part of how the TARDIS works.
The TARDIS does heal. You know, when you've got companions who get wounded or get sick and things, they go back to they take it back to the TARDIS, and the TARDIS does use some regenerative properties to help heal them. But
the common cold is just a little bit too far beyond its capability.
She hadn't really been in the TARDIS that long, and if she was still just kind of developing the cold, she literally dashed in.
Yeah.
In the previous story, and immediately starts going monkeying around in the wardrobe room, which you'll note as we get to further episodes, she goes through a series of some wonky costumes just because she's Dodo and she's weird.
Why not?
Because she can.
What is this, the Crusades? He's making fun of. He's like, you're going to be responsible for that because you never know when you're going to need it. That's a great Doctor Who line. Right.
Yes.
There. Yeah. Because never know you're going to need it.
Now see,
the orange jumpsuit.
This is the kind of stuff that I want to see tied into the modern era. Like, I want to see Capaldi show up on Refusus with Bill in the next series. And, you know, it's like, you know, 23 years or something after this story takes place. And it's like, oh, hey, look, it's the Doctor back again. Hmm. Or, you know.
No, it's another 700 years and they've become legend again.
Something like that. Yeah, anything like that. Just tie it in. Or then, you know, need that one, like, they wind up in the Middle Ages and he's looking for a costume for a new companion or something. Like, here, you can wear, oh, where did that go? Dodo.
Just shake his fist. Dodo.
Or he finds it and it's like torn.
it's got that rip.
Anyway.
But yeah, we will definitely make sure that we continue with this is a fun stretch of the series at this point. So we'll make sure that we continue. We've got some good ones coming up.
Yeah, I'm especially looking forward to the next rewatch that we've got on the list. But
but we will get to that. So, speaking of which, so when we when next we three meet again, we're gonna wrap the last of our backlogged interviews from LI Who 3, where we get to sit down with Mickey himself, Noel Clark, and get to chat and goof around with him for a little while. He was probably had more energy bottled up over the course of that weekend than anybody else. Well, almost anybody. Katie Manning probably give him a run for his money. But they were both firing on all pistons that weekend, so it was a good chance to chat with him too. But then week after that, as Jay alluded to, right back into the mix, and we'll jump to our next complete available story. Unfortunately, after the arc aired, we had The Celestial Toymaker, which is a great story, but is missing some of the episodes. So you can just listen to the audio, find your recons out there or whatever. But that brings us to...
us to the Gunfighters.
Put on your boots and sing us a song, because it's Dr. Whovian Hoedown.
I offered the idea of actually doing a sing-along episode, but it was shot down rather quickly.
Yeah,
shot down. Why.
Nice. It'd be There's fun. A pun in there somewhere.
You keep searching for that, yeah.
Let's do some news. All right, first item on deck. Came across an interesting little tidbit here. They are continuing to rapidly embrace the development of Bill as our next companion, as Bill's costume is now on a limited display at the Doctor Who Experience. So if you want a chance to go see the denim jacket with the patches, the Prince t-shirt, you know, the purple rain t-shirt and so forth, and kind of get a feel for whether you think that's going to give you any insight as to who or when Bill really is. If we've got any folks in the Cardiff area, I know a couple of folks I'll be ringing up and ask them if they can dash in, take a quick look. There's some photos available, see what you can glean from it, but kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome. And I'm Yeah, and I know that my knee-jerk reaction was to dislike this character based on plenty of other things. Nothing to do with her or anything, but I, you know, now that it's sunk in, it's like, okay, this is her next companion. I'm starting to get excited. I'm like, I want to see what's next. I want to see what's coming.
Mm. Well, any time after you have a fairly long-running companion, your initial instinct is to hate the new person.
Right. Like, no, you can't.
We'll say it. Many people's initial instinct is.
Depends on how much you like the character.
But I know I was just closing out our poll. Like, we had our Who's Next poll running on the site for a while and had, I don't know how many applicants or how many people jumped in to say, you know, whether they wanted, oh, I want a young male companion. I want a young female companion. I want a more mature female companion. I want a couple companions. I want the doctor to fly alone for a while and so forth. So the votes were all over the place. But it was actually one of the least chosen conditions as far as voter input was to have what we ended up with, which is a younger female companion again. I think people were kind of hoping for a bit of a change up a bit. They actually, I think the predominant voted category was a mature female character. They wanted somebody to get a little closer to Capaldi's acting age so they could have a different change in the chemistry there. But
they wanted Donna back.
I think they just either wanted River or Missy just yeah. to
we're all just around with we're all just upset that River's gone. That's a...
too soon.
That's true. But then
yay, this is exciting. So
mine's coming tomorrow.
So for anyone that doesn't have, you know, if you don't have the 750 British pounds lying around that you can just toss at something like the actual reproduction, the replica, most of us are going to fall into the category of wanting the toy version of the 12th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver, which is now available on the BBC Shop.
Yes. Yes. And it's lovely. And if you order it, probably they'll do this maybe for about the next couple of weeks or so at most. They're putting some trading cards in as well that have the 12th Doctor has Clara and her waitress in the restaurant at the end of time outfit. And I think the last card is Missy, toting the Vortex Manipulator. So get a little bonus with it. So US dollars, you're looking at about $30 plus your shipping. And they're getting these out extremely quickly. I mean, mine's showing up at the door for 4 days after I placed the order. So I'm impressed. And it is, I think this is from the same group that does the majority of the replicas plastic, that we have out there. Yeah. So it hasn't turned up on Amazon and those things yet, but it will, obviously. I think there's, I don't know what the statute of limitations is, but we'll definitely put the link there, which also includes a great little short video from Capaldi himself talking about the new Sonic. So lots of stuff to enjoy there too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, if you are into the Big Finish audio dramas, then, you know, congratulations, you're a sane human being. If you're not, what's wrong with you? But this is the first one, right? Yeah, the first of the 10th Doctor adventures with the Doctor and Donna has been released.
Yeah, and people have been tweeting all day. It is as of our recording here, it was actually dropped today, and oddly enough, on what was kind of considered the unofficial official David Tennant day at Big Finish, their site went down for hours, and people got scared. But I made my purchase. I paid in advance so I could download it today, and you took my money, and now. So I don't know what their issues were, but they put their best propeller heads in the job. They had it back up by probably about mid morning here U.S. time, so, you know, midday, early afternoon British time, and got everything resolved, and everybody, you know, kind of smoothed the waters and such. But the reviews are already coming back in, and it was like, you know, it's like Tennant and Tate never left the set. They essentially just hit pause, went out to grab a bite, and came right back and did it because their characters are just seamless. So, and please, please, please enjoy. And even if this is what gets you into Big Finish audio, fine,
yeah,
fine. Just do it. You will not be disappointed.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is the exciting thing too, is because, you know, look at Baker, look at Davidson. Like, they're still doing this stuff because it's audio. You don't need to look the same anymore. It's okay if your actor ages. So I expect that we're going to wind up seeing a lot of stuff from David Tennant in the Big Finish range.
Mm-hmm. Well, provided what his schedule can accommodate.
No, I have a feeling he will make time for this kind of thing.
Well, you never know. They try to make more and more accommodations. I know that they actually did establish a stateside studio. They've got one out in the greater LA area that they can use for anybody who's, as a result of if they're trying to get tracks laid down while someone's on location and things like that, they can accommodate that too. I think they did that initially for Barrowman, but so they've got, I don't know what they call it, Big Finish West or something like that. So yeah, they're starting to get more accomplished. Plus, not to mention the fact that hell, they have to do a bunch of the recordings for the Fourth Doctor Adventures by going to Baker's house.
True. Yeah.
So I'm sure they might consider doing the same for Dave. Maybe.
Yeah, but if they do that, then you miss out on the lunches, which are apparently the whole reason for doing work for Big Finish.
Yeah, the lunch spread is legendary. Yeah.
It's like if you ever talk to anyone that has done anything with Big Finish, ask them about the lunches and watch their eyes light up.
I think I've heard that one of them say, if they didn't pay me and just offered me the lunch, I would still do it.
Yeah. I need to see photo evidence of some of these spreads because as they get described, they're multiple courses, they're elaborately, they're made from scratch and everything's local, it's beautiful. And it's always a ton of food. Like they no one ever says, you know, oh, and I have to get in there quick because it'll all be gone. It's never gone. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. So I need to see, you know, hello, Instagram accounts. I need to start seeing some of these Big Finish lunch spreads.
Nobody ever runs down the street and grabs a couple of pizzas. That's not what they do.
No, they save that for Torchwood.
Oh.
Come on.
Oh, but that is all the news that we've got this week. So yeah, next week we will be coming back with the Noel Clark interview, which I'm excited about hearing that one again because that was fun. But
really, I wish we'd kept recording.
Yeah, I was going to say we cut the mics just as we started teaching him about some American colloquialisms and turns of phrase that he was not familiar with,
which then became running gags the entire weekend.
Uh huh. Yeah. So for any of you who were there that November and kept hearing Noel, every time he would like go to hike up the back of his track pants or something, or if he was, you know, commenting on people's cosplay or something, and he mentioned swamp ass.
You're welcome.
We're sorry. Sorry, we're not sorry, because it was funny as hell. But anyway.
All right. Well, this has been episode 184 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, my nose isn't running. I'm crying this time.
And this is Scare saying, my dear, I couldn't send you home even if I wanted to.
And this is Haley saying, no.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2016.
Probably one of the best responses to a villain being called out on giving away his secrets. That's what I'm going to do to you, Mr. Bond. Did you just tell me what your secret plans are? No. You could apply that to anything.
You know what that kind of reminds me of? The first Avengers when Black Widow's on the phone and she's like, this idiot's giving me everything. He's like, I'm not giving her everything.
I'm in the room. I can hear you.
Oh, man.
So now I've just got to wonder now if Thor Ragnarok is going to have some scene between Thor and Loki, and Loki's, you know, off pontificating about something, and Thor just says, brother, did you just tell me exactly what you were about to... no. Tom Hiddleston is the Monoids.
Oh, man. I don't know. Now talking about Marvel stuff, I want to go watch Civil War again.
I missed my opportunity. I was going to go catch it again this past weekend, but I'll nab it again.
Yeah.
No, at our nice $6 theater. Can't go wrong. Actually, it's playing. The drive-in just opened up last weekend for the season. So they're doing that along with... Oh, I think they're doing it with that Jungle Book thing.
So well, maybe I'll just doesn't Apocalypse come out this weekend?
No, that's the 27th, I believe.
Oh, yeah, Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
Yeah. No, the only complaint that I have about Civil War, the only thing that I'm complaining is the fact that they gave Sharon Carter cap speech. It's like that's my favorite page of comics ever, and they give it to somebody else.
Well, here's a thing though. In doing so, they didn't plan it, but in my head, and I'll give credit to Andy for actually reiterating this too. I thought it, and he said it first, so I'll give him credit. Is that it closes the book on Peggy Carter nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, since we don't have the show to, you know, to continue with, now that book ends everything. I mean, that was a rough moment. I mean, that whole funeral sequence.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was really, really heart-wrenching. Whether it should have been her to take that line, I don't know, because that would mean that you'd have to have that Cap and Spidey moment.
Not necessarily, but
because that's Spidey's turning point.
No, I know. But I'm saying, like, you could have used it at some other point, but it's just the fact that it wasn't Captain America delivering it just kind of robbed it of something for me.
Okay. I guess I got to look at it every once in a while, especially with these, especially as these become these massive ensemble comic films. Mm. I keep... Every once in a while, flip-flopping in my brain between, or I know this content, I know these characters, I know where they're going with this, or what canon is. And then every once in a while, putting myself in the mindset of somebody who just wanted to go see an action film, and they don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
And is it you know, how's it playing in their heads? So I'm constantly asking people who don't really have that, so what'd you think of so-and-so? How do you feel the fact that they spent so much time on Black Panther in a film that was supposed to be about Captain America and so on? And just kind of getting those feels for it.
Yeah. But. Now, I will say that I was really pleasantly surprised with the way that they worked the storyline, because it was nothing like the comics. And yet, and yet it worked really well. I was like, no, that was a compelling story. I was invested the entire time, but it was not at all what I was. I mean, I had been going up to this movie for months, like Team Iron Man. And now I'm like, oh, no.
Mm. Well, on that note, I'll have to, we got some S.H.I.E.L.D. I got to catch up on. Right, so this is the 2-hour finale week.
Yep.
Right, okay. So that's done, and apparently they've been.
Huh? I feel like we should go ahead and mention it, since it's come up so many times in the After Dark segment here, that unfortunately Gallivant was canceled.
Yeah,
that was a blow. Although,
as was Agent Carter,
and the S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff show.
They're not going forward with Most Wanted.
Right, so maybe that will allow. Well. I don't know. They had to completely disavow knowledge of Bobby and Hunter. So I don't know if they can cameo back in.
That just means they're comic book dead. That's all it is.
Yeah. They're a rogue organization anyways, so what's it matter?
But would it kind of cheapen their... I mean, they had a great send-off. I mean, that spy goodbye thing and taking weepy shots.
Some of us aren't caught up yet.
Oh, okay.
Spoilers.
Dude. I know not. Kira, you were supposed to kick me under the table, not Haley.
Sorry. I can't control the claws. So that's that. Actually, before anything else, I got to go catch up on Archer. Got my priorities right where they need me.
Yeah, I need to do that too.
Need my Pam fix.
There's so many shows that now that it's summer, I'm like, I'm just going to spend the entire summer watching shows. That's all I'm going to do, just to catch up.
Oh, but since you did mention Gallivant, last point I'll leave you on is that Alan Menken has actually alluded to the idea that he'd be willing to write a stage production.
Okay.
So, I mean, he's obviously he's got the chops, so it's not a question.
I was hoping you were going to say something like...
Oh, good, another play that I'll never get to see.
I was hoping it was going to be something like he's been talking to ABC Family or Comedy Central or something along those lines.
I don't really know of any other networks that would...
Netflix.
Netflix with a 24-minute installment musical comedy, even for them, I don't think they look at it and say,
Can you imagine how fantastic it would be on Netflix, though? Just constantly making digs at ABC?
Yes. Yes. The snake would eat itself, yes.
I say, give it a year or so. Let Gallivant actually hit Netflix and start gaining some traction. Let them watch those numbers, and it might be a possibility.
Yeah, go all Arrested Development with it, yeah.
Yeah.
Except, well, maybe, you know, not exactly actually, like Arrested Development.
Make it no, good but this
as
time.
Far as yeah. recapture of,
yeah.
of...
All right.
Cool.
Well, let's get
See
out of here.
See you later.
Right. Bye.
Outs.